He gave the name of Thompson, and followed this up by John Thompson. The latter, his son, is alive. Dr. Sharp straightened the matter out thus. The man who came was a Dr. Thompson. He was a minister, a doctor of divinity, or something of that sort. You were at his school with his son John Thompson. In order to attract your attention, he called out John Thompson, but the latter was not manifesting. It was his father. 103, January 13, 1911, 2.30 to 4 p.m. Sitters were my old friends Mr. and Mrs. Z, their two nieces, and myself. This was a marvelous séance. My friends are old residents of Toledo. They had long wished to sit with Mrs. Rhett, but one thing and another had prevented it, and it was destined for me to bring them together. I had sat with them in some other séance rooms many times, and knew the names of their relatives in spirit life and their guides. Mrs. Rhett had never seen them, and knew absolutely nothing about them. The three ladies are mediumistic. In a few minutes phantoms began to appear. There were several for the Z party, one of which was a nun, who is the guide of Mrs. Z. She gave her correct name, Edna, was fully recognized, and talked some time. Standing in front of us, she pronounced a benediction in Latin, and then repeated it in English. An Indian guide, called Silver Moon, gave his customary woo-whoop in the middle of the séance, then exhibited a large illuminated disc, and, after a short talk, disappeared. Every relation of the Z.S. in spirit life that I ever heard of came and spoke through the trumpet. They correctly mentioned by name several people in earth life, as well as those in spirit life. I was introduced to all. A spirit, name unknown, joined in a song we were singing at the time. The only phenomena for me were an etherealization, which bowed at the name of Father, and my sister Catherine, who said, I am 56 years old as counted in earth life. On my return home I looked in the family Bible, and found that she was born December 7, 1853. She also said, Iola is sitting on that chair beside you. There was a vacant chair between the flowers and myself. This display of spirit power was the more remarkable because the atmospheric conditions were not good. It was thawing. January 14, 1911. 4.50 to 5.50 p.m. sitting with Mrs. Rhett alone. I had now tried the voices in the light three times, and the process was so slow that I decided to work always in the dark. In the light I was not able to distinguish clearly any other voices than those of Dr. Sharp and Viola. Four spirits manifested, a Miss Maria Havgall, a judge, whose name I could not catch, much to his irritation, Catherine, and Viola. The last mentioned spoke for half an hour, standing in front of me, the radiant form being visible, but not the features. After the séance I was impressed with the name of the judge. Slight thaw, the weather improving. The little household was increased in the night by the arrival of Dr. John, a physician from Ontario. Sunday, January 15, 1911. 11.50 a.m. Dr. John and I sitting with Mrs. Rhett. One beautiful phantom appeared, but was not recognized. Then Mr. Gladstone spoke, principally in praise of Mr. Lloyd George and his speaking out. He also sent advice to Mr. Stead. We were then interrupted, and had to open the door. On closing it again no phenomena took place. The séance only lasted about 15 minutes. After dinner a party of 10 sat with Mrs. Rhett from 2 p.m. to 4.15 p.m. from 4.40 to 5.45 Dr. John and I had a good séance with her. First came Dr. Sharp, who explained his absence in the morning by saying that he was, at that time, attending a ceremony of the elevation of Dr. John's mother to the sixth sphere. It was her earth birthday. 104. The old lady then came in, voluble, pleased, and very excited, speaking chiefly in German, but sometimes in English. She described to her son what had happened, which relatives were present at the ceremony, and so forth. Let my readers think of some scene they have witnessed when an elderly lady has spent an exciting day, made enjoyable by the love and compliments of her relatives and friends, and wishes to describe it to some near relative who was not able to be present, and they will understand the interview between a mother in spirit life and a devoted son in earth life. It was as natural as possible to me. Sitting there, in the dark, I forgot that the loud, clear voice in front of Dr. John was that of one long since dead. The next visitor was a guide of Dr. John, Dr. L, who spoke for a short time to him, and also to me. He was followed by a sister of Dr. John, who repeated much of what her mother had said, and held a conversation of quite 10 minutes with her brother in German. Her voice was loud through the trumpet. While this was going on, my guide was talking to me in low tones direct, without the assistance of the trumpet. Two spirits were demonstrating at once in different languages. We now got the judge of the day before, who turned out to be Sir William Dobson, once Chief Justice of Tasmania. He was still nettled at my failure to catch his name on a former occasion. We spoke a short time of mutual friends, and he departed. With him a niece of Dr. John reported herself, speaking in English. Again two conversations were going on at the same time with two different sitters. Galileo now announced himself plainly, and spoke loudly through the trumpet in English. He said, "I invented the telescope, and was persecuted for my beliefs." He spoke bitterly of his persecution, and declared, "They burnt me at the stake." I said, "Oh, come, not quite so bad as that." He replied, "Well, they wanted to." He mentioned Marconi, and said, "He is not making perfect one thing at one time, but is branching off into experiments." I have no idea to what he was alluding. Q. The fact that the world is round was well known, was it not, to Plato, Pythagoras, and Hypatia? A. Plato knew it, but was afraid to speak out. We do not know Hypatia by that name, we call her, name blurred, I could not catch it. Q. I mean Theon's daughter. A. Yes, I know, Theon's daughter. Q. By Dr. John, how did you get the idea that the earth moved round the sun? Galileo then went into a long description of a vision he had in his room, the language he heard during the vision, and a scroll that was exhibited for him to read. In doing this he used both Greek and Latin. I was unable to follow, and I do not think Dr. John was more fortunate, for he spoke quickly and not very concisely. Q. Is Mars inhabited? A. Mars is inhabited, and will someday come into contact with the Earth by means of electricity. Q. Do the etheric waves in wireless telegraphy pass over or through the Earth, mountains, and seas? A. Over. They are met above by a layer of etheric resistance, and deflected down again. This is the best interpretation I can give of what he said. Q. Is there a planet beyond Neptune? A. No. Galileo was followed by Iola's father, with whom I had a talk about family matters, very convincing as to identity, but of no interest to the public. During this sitting the atmospheric conditions were perfect, the air dry and still, thermometer so to 150, sun out nearly all day. Monday, January 16, 1911. Half an hour's sitting with Mrs. Rhett alone at 11 a.m. Dr. Sharp came, and said he thought we had better put it off, as I was not well enough, but eventually he allowed Iola to come in. My guide stood before me in phantasmal form, and gave me much information about past family history. I asked her if she remembered the fun we used to have as children in the holidays at a certain house in London. She replied, "Oh, yes, but I talked with you about that 2 years ago. It is true that Mrs. George's script of February, 1909, contains references to this matter." 105, Monday, January 16, 1911. Dr. John and I sat with Mrs. Rhett from 4.50 to 5.50 p.m. First came a childish voice to me, "I am Ada Newton, and I want you to tell my papa that brother has taken from me the ring he gave me, as he wants to give it to papa himself." Question: what is the ring like, dear? Answer: it was a little, thin, gold-banded ring. Question: was there any mark on it? Answer: yes, inside there was a 1 and a 4 and a K. Question: Mrs. Rhett will tell your mother, dear. Answer: I want you to tell my papa. Interval of quite 15 minutes. Then Dr. Sharp came. He asked me if I was not feeling bad in the legs. I said yes. He said I was often drawn upon, but ought to recover my magnetism 10 minutes after leaving the séance room, adding, You will be all right if you take that medicine. Thanks to Dr. John, I had doubled my ordinary gout prescription at 9 a.m., I said. I believe I have what is called the healing gift. Not much now, he replied. Too much of your vitality is gone. 10 or 12 years ago you had that power. Then came two spirits together, a sister of Dr. John, speaking loudly through the trumpet, and Viola, in the direct voice. I explained to the latter how I had come to understand some of her conversation in the morning. The voice of Dr. John's sister effectively prevented anyone hearing my guide's talk with me, for the two conversations went on simultaneously for 10 minutes. Next, Dr. Graham, formerly a personal friend of Dr. John, and a famous physician in Toronto. He passed over 11 years ago. He said, "Wasn't that an excellent operation this afternoon? Did you notice how careful he was not to pull the bowels and kidney too much to the left, so as to avoid straining the connection with the bladder? I have never seen an operation better performed. What skill? Are you going down tomorrow? You should do so." At 3 o'clock, Dr. John had returned from witnessing the important operation of nephrocolopexy at the hospital. He was much interested. The operation had been conducted by the man who invented it, and it was successful. He took the advice of Dr. Graham, and altered his plans, remaining another day, and attending the hospital the next morning. The seance closed with a visit from Iola's mother. The atmospheric conditions were perfect. Mrs. Rhett and I communicated with Mrs. Newton over the phone about Ada's message. The real truth was explained to me by Mr. Newton on January 22, 1911. On December 29, 1910, at one of Johnson's seances, Mr. Newton gave his daughter in spirit life a small ring, which she took away with her into the cabinet. Presently she returned, and exhibited the ring on her finger. Mr. Newton gave her instructions to find the original owner of the ring in spirit life and give it to her. It once belonged to a lady very dear to him. He went on to say that he did not know of any mark inside the ring. But, if there was, he felt pretty sure it had been so much worn that it would not now be visible. Fate willed it that I should be a witness of the sequel to this touching little incident. By an accident, I was able to attend a seance at Johnson's on February 3, in company with the Newtons. Their son materialized, and approached his father, saying, in very low tones, "Grandma Newton sends her love." The father held out his hand, the ring was dropped into it. He immediately handed it to me, and, when I got sufficient light to examine it, I found it exactly as described by Ada, and inside 14K. Ada came after her brother, but was hardly able to speak. I was told by those who were present that the materialization of Ada on December 29th was a most beautiful sight. She had a wreath of flowers on her head, and brought flowers in her hands. On February 3rd, when I saw her, she was also very pretty. The point of this story is that the little thin, gold-banded ring had been worn all her life by Mr. Newton's mother. This fact was unknown to me, to the Johnsons, and to Mrs. Rhett. I felt gratified at being allowed by the spirit guides of the Newtons to participate in this neat test. Tuesday, January 17, 1911. Sat with Mrs. Rhett alone at 11 a.m. The only spirit that manifested was Iola, with whom I had a brief conversation. It was practically a failure. At 4.50 p.m. we tried again. Dr. Sharp came, and Viola. We had a discussion on the impressions that have appeared during the last 7 years on some of my old photographs. She declared that the power to do this was derived from one of the members of my household who is a psychic. Dr. Sharp advised me not to sit the following day, as I was too weak. By this time I was so depleted that I could barely stand on my legs, and I took his advice. 106, Sunday, January 22, 1911. 2 to 4 p.m. with Mrs. Rhett. The party consisted of Miss Ada Besnett, the famous young medium of Toledo, Mr. and Mrs. Murray Moore, her adopted parents, two of their Detroit friends, and myself. It is a singular fact that the Moores and their charge had never met Mrs. Rhett, and it was reserved for me to bring them together. I sat next to Miss Ada. Her control is an Indian called Black Cloud. He speaks through her mouth. She was falling into trance by my side when I heard a low voice, "Me no send you to sleep." Migo. The young lady remained awake from this moment to the end of the sitting. Dr. Sharp came twice, and about 10 spirits of relatives and friends of the party satisfactorily identified themselves. My guide came early, and had a talk with Miss Ada, then went to the other end of the circle and identified herself to Mrs. Moore. She and Miss Ada sang together a bar or two of an Indian song. Another spirit sang a few bars of Home Again with a young psychic. Silvermoon turned up again. He often functions in Miss Ada's seances, gave his war whoop, talked a little, showed his illuminated disc, and disappeared. To me, the most interesting feature in this seance was the demonstration of an Indian girl called Pansy. Pansy had been one of the familiar spirits of Maggie Gall, and, since that psychic's lamentable death in 1910, was more or less free to move about on her own account. Her present occupation seems to be to follow Professor Hislop in his investigations, and to make fun of him. After announcing herself, she said she came with Chief Jim, James Hislop. She went to Mrs. Moore, and said, "I want to tell you something, but you no tell anyone else, a secret between you and me. Now," turning the voice to us, "you people, put your fingers in your ears while I talk to Squaw." Of course, we did nothing of the sort, but listened attentively. "Do you know who put ideas into your top not to answer Chief Jim?" A roar of laughter from all. "I tell secret to Squaw," indignantly. "You people no listen. Put your fingers in your ears, I tell you." Then, to Mrs. Moore, "Do you know who put those things into your top not to say to Chief Jim?" "It was Maggie Gall." She said several other funny things which delighted the whole party. James Hislop had just left Toledo, after an exhaustive examination of Miss Ada Besnett, and had engaged in several discussions with Mrs. Moore, who often combated his arguments. Atmospheric conditions perfect. 107. Monday, January 23, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone, 7.10 to 8.10 p.m. After 20 minutes waiting, I had a long talk with my guide. She said, "How I wish I could write a little letter to you occasionally, and put it in the care of Miss Searle. I am sure Miss Searle will forgive me if I say that I could not, for a minute or two, understand what Iola meant." Question: "I do not quite understand." Answer: "Miss Searle, the little post office. The nearest post office to my house is a shop kept by a Miss Searle. I consider this as a remarkable test, as it is evidence of my guide's familiarity with the neighborhood in which I live. Again, how I wish we could take a little walk along the path from Southsea to Portsmouth. This is also a good test. Once, and once only, I walked with Iola from Southsea to Portsmouth. This was in 1861, and the present fine road was not then made, there was merely a path." Dr. Sharp came and straightened out some of the talk, which I did not understand. Atmospheric conditions perfect. Tuesday, January 24, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone, 5 to 5.40 p.m. Catherine came for a few minutes, then Iola, who sang a few bars of a song. Question: "If I place a line of cards on the bureau in my room, can you take up one of them?" Answer: "I cannot do that, because you are not a materialization medium." She then gave me a report of my wife's health, which I found out afterwards was correct. I then referred to Mrs. Georgia, who was in hospital at Rochester. She said, "She is much better." Question: "Do you think her power will return?" Answer: "Oh, certainly, as her physical strength returns." Question: "Is it worthwhile my going to Rochester?" Answer: "I think not. She would not have sufficient power." Question: "Do you see much of my married daughter?" Answer: "Every day." Question: "Do you know which of her children was born on your birthday?" Answer: "The second, correct." Question: "What is her name?" A pet name was given, which was correct. Wednesday, January 25, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone from 6.30 to 6.55 p.m. Atmospheric conditions bad. Weather close and muggy. Thaw. All I got on this occasion were some fine spirit lights about the size of 50-cent pieces, generally level with, or below, my knees. The medium, however, saw a form and the name of a young woman which she said was Victoria. This was my third failure with Mrs. Rhett. 108, Thursday, January 26, 1911. Atmospheric conditions bad. An old farmer, Mr. R., came to visit Mrs. Rhett, and, I think, with the hope of a sitting, there was also another visitor, whom we got rid of. Finding Mr. Two was very deaf, especially in his left ear, and a very good sitter, I suggested to the psychic that he should join a seance to help me out a little with his magnetism. He was invited, and given the seat of honor next to the flowers, while I sat on his left and the psychic opposite. Time, 2.30 to 3.30 p.m. Dr. Sharp came for a few minutes, and then sent my guide, who talked for some 20 minutes, standing in front of me, a thin, small phantom. Mr. R.S. son came in and talked to his father independently of the trumpet, at the same time that Iola was talking to me, two voices at one time. Among other things Iola said, "Your smoking will not prevent my visiting you here or at home." I said, "Are you quite sure?" That thought had been in my mind today. Iola, "Yes, I know that, it will not hurt me." Observe here that I had asked no question. My guide answered a mental query I had put to myself when strolling about during the day. This is the third or fourth time that Iola has replied by voice to my thoughts of hours before. Soon after a voice came, "William, William." Question, "Yes, what is your name?" Answer, "Roberts." Question, "Robarts, you mean?" Answer, "No." Then a voice in my left ear from my guide, "It's all right. It is Robarts." Question, "How are you, Adash?" Calling him by his Christian name. Answer, "Am I intruding?" Question, "No, very glad to see you." Answer, "Williams, you have no idea how much we are all trying to help you. I thought at first you would consider me intruding." Question, "No, glad to see you." Answer, "I will come again someday. Goodbye." The last visitor was a connection of mine by marriage, but we were practically strangers. A curious point in the interview was that he gave the name by which his family was known in the early part of last century. We had quite a conversation about his daughters in spirit life. The husband of the youngest of the daughters had just married again. Q, how is H? A, very well. Q, does she know of the latest changes with regard to her little boy? A, yes, and she is very glad. The daughter H came in later. So glad to see you, uncle. Q, very glad to see you, H. Have you heard of the new arrangements about your little son? A, yes, I like her very much indeed. There are no jealousies in the spirit world. Good soft hyphen by, uncle. I was brought by father. Note, 1, I had not said a word about her husband marrying a second wife. 2, the knowledge of our relationship, which she gave correctly. An acquaintance of Mr. R's, who only died about a week before, came to him and talked volubly for about 5 minutes. Then came Sir W. W., to whom I said, "Well, Sir W., I have had a talk with you before. You brought Mr. Gladstone the other day." Answer, "Yes, I was glad to do so. He was our premier on earth, and is a premier here." Question, "You and I did not agree on this subject when you were on this plane?" Answer, "No. But I am now much obliged to you, and glad of the correspondence which took place then. I wish you every success. Goodbye." There were many good spirit lights, some the size of half crowns. As I anticipated, I was not drawn upon at all during this sitting, but Mr. R. went downstairs, threw himself into an armchair, and slept for an hour and a half. At tea I told him how much he had assisted me, and he said, "Well, well, I had a powerful lot taken out of me, but if I did you any good, I guess I am real glad." Friday, January 27, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone, 9.30 a.m. to 10 a.m. Atmospheric conditions bad, thaw and a little rain. Plenty of flowers on the table. The psychic said, "I see a short, thick-set man, with a beard. He is good-looking." He tried to etherealize. Not recognized. My guide attempted to materialize near the flowers and about the room, She tried hard to show her face. After nearly 15 minutes waiting, she spoke for some 20 minutes about matters of no interest to my readers, but convincing to me, as all her utterances clearly showed that she was acquainted with all my actions, and had knowledge of what was going on at my house, proved later. Mrs. Rhett said, "I see the name of Stone." A voice, "My name is Stone." Question, "I only know of one Stone. He was Astronomer Royal at the Cape of Good Hope." Answer, "I am he, and I am very glad to be here this morning. I thought I would come on the strength of our old acquaintance. Mr. Gladstone told me of you, he is much interested in these phenomena. Q, is G. right in supposing there are stars, of the first magnitude, which have no parallax? A, he is. Q, I have lately spoken with Sir Isaac Newton, and he said that gravitation could be opposed by the vibrations of a musical note, see apostrophe Kaiser Seances. A, ha, ha. Newton would find that pretty hard to explain himself. Q, is there a planet beyond Neptune? A, yes, but it is uninhabited. I mentioned Galileo, and Stone said, ah, he is a well-known spirit here. Q, do you know anything of Mars? A, Mars will someday be connected with the Earth by electricity. The inhabitants are small, short, and dark. They have organisms to withstand the rarefied atmosphere and intense heat. I am still working on astronomical problems. Goodbye. 109, Tuesday, February 7, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone, 1.30 to 2.30 p.m. only my guide and Dr. Sharp manifested. Iola gave me an account of my wife's health, which, on my arrival in England, turned out to be correct. Q. What did you see me doing on Sunday afternoon? A. You were with Mr. and Mrs. Z. Q. Where did I go with Mr. Z? A. To Mrs. J. Correct. Q. Yes, but where else? A. To some young people, nieces, I think. Q. What did we talk about when I was with Mr. and Mrs. Z? A. As far as I could make out, about the Bangs test and the phenomena generally. What had happened was this: Mr. Z called for me in his motor early in the afternoon, and we paid visits, first on his sister-in-law and elderly widowed nieces, of whom Mrs. J. was one, who all lived in the house of Mrs. J., then upon his two young daughters, who lived in houses at a quite different part of the city. We then went to Mr. Z.'s house, where he, Mrs. Z., and I had a long conversation. It was chiefly about the extraordinary reminiscences of Iola, who had for weeks been giving me accurate information respecting happenings of nearly half a century ago. The Bangs test and the phenomena generally were, no doubt, touched upon. This incident shows that mind-reading accounts for very little, since I had the doings of Sunday afternoon at Toledo, 50 to 60 miles off, clearly in my upper consciousness, and they were not quite accurately revealed by the voice. It also shows that even a guide does not see or hear everything, but only absorbs a general knowledge of what affects her charge in daily affairs. Dr. Sharp came to say a few words. He was present when a picture was precipitated at Chicago, and admired it. The Bangs sisters, he declared, were much exhausted. He again extolled them for the good they were doing. Tuesday, February 7, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone, 7.15 to 8.25 p.m. First Dr. Sharp, who assured me that he was with me at Chicago, and that his face was imprinted on the canvas near me, also the face of Iola's father. Then came relations and friends, who spoke of private matters. The fact that the faces of Iola's father and my father were imprinted on the canvas at Chicago was fully confirmed. My guide spoke of my father by his Christian name, a peculiar one, without any hint from me. Atmospheric conditions good. Wednesday, February 8, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone, 9.15 to 10.5 a.m. Dr. Sharp manifested at the beginning and end of the sitting. Iola talked on private affairs for at least half an hour. There were many attempted etherealizations. My guide made up particularly well in form. The face was visible, but, try as I would, I was unable to distinguish the features clearly enough for identification. She often complained, in tones of real concern, "I cannot make out why you do not see me."